Welcome to Autocomplete. It's the Roadshow's weekly podcast about the intersection of cars and technology. I'm Brian Cooley, editor at large, joined again this week by our editor-in-chief, Tim Stevens. And we kick things off now with a quick taste of what's new on Roadshow at theroadshow.com. Tim, you just had the enviable job of taking out a Huracan Spider. What do you say about a car like that?
Oh, man, it's hard to stop saying things about a car like that. I tested the coupe version last year and absolutely fell in love with it. So I had the chance to test out the Spider this year. It was unfortunately a very rainy week that I had the car, so I didn't get to spend as much time with the top down as I would have liked. And you'll see in the video, in fact, that I'm kind of bundled up because it was pretty chilly, too. But amazing car. I mean, that car sounds fantastic. The V10, that car, is one of the best-sounding engines on the road today. And getting rid of the roof just makes it sound all that much better. It's a little heavier, a little slower, but, man, it's great. So the full review is on the site.
And that was kind of in that amazing sort of light blue, almost like a Mustang Mach 1 grabber blue, right?
The one I did for the launch was in that amazing kind of beautiful flat blue. The one I tested for the full review is actually in a much more subtle metallic gray, actually. So it's a little bit more of a sleeper, but it's pretty hard to hide the curves on that car.
I don't want a gray Spider. I want a loud color. If I'm taking the top off.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're driving a crazy car like a Lamborghini, man, it's got to be in a crazy car.
It's got to be in a loud color. Okay, Wayne just finished a ton of miles in the new Range Rover. 3,500 miles he did in this car. Is that right?
Yeah, he cruised up the West Coast all the way up to Portland, I think it was, and then back down again in SF. And Emmy also took that car and did some off-roading in it to check out how great the car is in the off-road conditions. So we both get Emmy's video testing the car off-road and Wayne's review of the car going a long, long way in the diesel. So some good coverage there. We've also got Emmy's new review of the new TTS, which is restyled to look a little bit more like the Audi R8. She really fell in love with that car, although that's in another boring color. That's in a flat gray, which she didn't like. She recommended
her. No way. That is not her color. So TTS, third generation. We're really loving the TTs. And, of course, in S-Trim and third generation, these are... We all universally, I think, dug that car. So some great cars to look at there at Roadshow, theroadshow.com. Check those out. Let's get into the news this week. A pretty substantial hack occurred this week. It's not the biggest car company in the world, Mitsubishi, but one of their Outlanders, a plug-in hybrid, actually, was breached by a UK security company going in through the car's built-in Wi-Fi. What do you make of all this, Tim? Is this a niche hack that doesn't portend a lot for the industry, or is this kind of exposing a broad issue with cars in general?
I think that this one's pretty indicative of some of the ignorance that a lot of these car companies have when it comes to security, the thought that people probably wouldn't really try to hack a car like this, because when you read the details of this hack, it's a pretty easy thing for someone to get into it. The way it was set up, basically the car has its own Wi-Fi hotspot, which had a very simple password on it. If you just knew the length of that password, they said it took 4 days to do a brute force attack on that password. So just 4 days of a normal computer processing to figure out what the password was in that car. And once they had the password figured out, they were able to very easily get in and do things like turn on and off the lights, to disable the alarm, which is probably the most troubling thing. And it was kind of shocking how limited the security was on this car. They weren't able to disable the ignition or cut the brakes or anything like that. But still, it was amazing how wide open the door was, basically, on this car.
And what's interesting is this seems to have operated sort of mobile device to car direct without going through the cloud or any telematics service. Apparently, this car is fairly unique in that it allows you to use its app to access it, unlock it, check its climate and all that with a direct Wi-Fi connection, where most other cars, I think, go through the cloud. So I guess that made this an easier hack.
It definitely did, yeah. Most cars will have some sort of an active modem, so a cellular connection within the car, which has a lot of advantages, namely that you can connect to your car regardless of where it is. With this Mitsubishi, you had to be within Wi-Fi range to be able to connect to the car. So your phone actually had to connect to it via like a wireless hotspot in order to control the car. That does make the car a little bit cheaper to run. There's no ongoing cost for cell data or anything like that. But it does open the door to some hacks like this, and it also makes it harder to shut them down, because if all of your communications are going up through the cloud and they're basically being controlled by some sort of central server controlled by the manufacturer, they can detect these sorts of problems and kind of shut them down remotely, put in a quick fix, and prevent that sort of thing from going through. But if you're talking directly to the car, there's really no way for anybody at Mitsubishi to intercept that communication. They have to provide an update to the car, which may actually entail going to the dealership to have that update installed.
Yeah, sort of like if it's just between a mobile device locally and a vehicle, I mean, there's no adult supervision, if you will. Right. So it can just be happening off in the shadows to any number of these cars, first, now that the word is out. Now, Mitsubishi is sending out their official reply to this hack, which was done, again, by a UK security firm that said, while they investigate, which as far as we know, they are still working on a fix or a patch, they recommend anyone who's got an Outlander with the Wi-Fi feature in the vehicle can deactivate that Wi-Fi. It's under cancel VIN registration, which is under your Mitsubishi app. It's not even intuitive. I mean, why doesn't it say something a little more logical?
That sounds pretty ominous to me. I mean, cancel VIN, you're registering your car from existence or something like that.
Right, cancel VIN registration. That sounds like, wait a minute, I'm erasing my vehicle. And this does differ quite a bit, by the way, folks, from the last fall's very notable hack of a Jeep by Chris Valasek and Charlie Miller, where they took control of drive controls. Right. As Tim mentioned, this is kind of going after some feature controls and the alarm system, but they could not get to the power steering rack, a drive-by-wire throttle, or anything like that. But alarming, and you know, as if Mitsubishi needs one more thing on their plate right now. You know, everyone we've been talking about the last few weeks on the show has been doing a dance and doing musical chairs with some kind of a ride or car sharing service, except Fiat Chrysler. They don't have a deal with a Lyft or an Uber or any of those around the world, but now they are apparently, reportedly, pursuing a deal where they would do something with Uber, not so much in ride services, but in supplying Uber with autonomous vehicles. Do you think that there's a significant marriage here? Does this sound interesting, or does this sound like a lot of smoke that FCA is putting up to try and sound modern?
It definitely sounds like a lot of smoke to me. In fact, in this Reuters report, Marcione kind of comes off as sounding desperate. They said that he's been talking to Uber, he's been talking to Amazon, he's been talking to Apple, and basically trying to get in with as many of these tech companies as he possibly can. I think the reason that they haven't made a big partnership with someone like Uber is because, as we've seen, it takes hundreds of millions of dollars or maybe even more to kind of get these companies to even get out of bed. So I don't think FCA has that kind of money lying around for them to do that sort of thing. And honestly, them rolling up to Uber and saying, hey, we'll give you free cars to kind of help develop this partnership, I don't really think that they're interested in that anyway. They're developing their own autonomous cars. We were talking about a couple of weeks ago. Right now, I think they're in a Ford. They're working with Ford anyway right now. I'm guessing that they purchased those cars. So I don't know that Uber really has a whole lot to gain from this relationship necessarily. But FCA definitely needs some help, and they need some tech chops. And I think that that's what they're trying to get in some way or another, any way possible, without having to write a big check, which is what a lot of other companies have been doing.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like Chrysler, FCA has got a lot that they bring to the party as being a technology innovator that has some secret sauce or code or electromechanical technology that Uber would like. I mean, they're just basically bringing cars, and you could say that, all right, they've got the deal with Google, and maybe FCA has got the ability or the right to say, okay, once we get some Google technology, we can bring that to you in Chrysler cars. But I would think Uber would just be working on their own, which we know they are. And just getting cars is the least interesting part of any kind of partnership like this. So, it seems to be, desperate was the sound as we read a lot of his comment. We're working with everybody. You know, that's never good. Suzuki's working with almost nobody right now in the CEO's office anyway, because they don't have one. Their CEO, which is one of the few who carries the company's name, this is Osamu Suzuki, and this guy is a tough nut. I mean, he's had a lot of partnerships with different car makers. He's not afraid to pull punches. If he's got an opinion about something, he says it. This is a real tough, thorny dude. But he has now stepped down from the head of Suzuki because of the recent revelations that they're about 5 or 6 years into falsifying MPG tests. These are the tests that they were doing indoors to avoid the effects of wind resistance. And you know, this is the biggest one we've seen yet of a Japanese executive stepping down in light of either emissions or MPG falsification. Suzuki's number 4 of the Japanese car makers, by the way, a little under 3 million units sold last year. For reference, compare that to Toyota at 10 million, so relatively small by that respect, but it's a pretty big story. And Lexus, if you have a Lexus car made since 14, 15, or possibly 16, as we understand it, you may have a bricked head unit. And if you do, Toyota says, well, we're working on it, trying to figure out how that happened. Apparently, Tim, an over-the-air update went bonkers. Apparently, it's a satellite-delivered update, which I find interesting. And apparently it may have broken on a number of cars, and apparently wasn't written to self-heal. And so now a lot of folks have kind of nothing on their head unit, we understand.
It sounds like this is one of those cases where if the firmware update was interrupted mid-flow, that ultimately bad things happened, and that's exactly what happened here. I don't know if it's because it was delivered via satellite or delivered over means that are very easy to disconnect effectively. But it's kind of a scary state that we're at a point now where you can have a pretty vital part of your car get bricked just because of an over-the-air update. You know, we're kind of used to that on phones, maybe waiting a day or two before you apply the new iOS update on your iPhone because the worst things could happen. But now it seems like you might be at that point with your car. The problem is, of course, these things are usually pushed to your car and you can't, you know, wait for a day or two. They pretty much go on there on their own. So if you do have this problem, it's unfortunate, but there's really not a whole lot we can tell you to do right now except be a little more patient.
Shouldn't something like this be written? I mean, with your experience in the software, wouldn't you write something like this so that it can never brick? It has to first all arrive on the car first and then make a copy of the previous image and then unload. And aren't there ways to secure this so it always falls back to the last version?
Yeah, there certainly should be. It should be the kind of thing where you can effectively create a dummy version and then kind of do a quick flop instead of having to absolutely overwrite something that's actually in use or vitally needed by the car. You know, but that sort of thing does take time, even if it is a quick swap from one side to the other. It could be interrupted one way or another with, you know, ignition timing out or maybe even a dead battery. So I don't know exactly what the circumstances are that's causing this. They haven't given a lot of details on that side of things yet. But, you know, it's one of those problems that software engineers have to deal with all the time. We're talking about embedded coding, and yeah, I would have thought that they could have done a little bit better job than this.
Yeah, surprising. So we understand a lot of folks are frustrated by this. For what we know now, again, Toyota's working on a fix. It may require, we don't know this yet, but it may require you go to the dealer because of the flaw that's happened. The system may not be able to now reach out and fetch another correct over-the-air update. That part of the code may be broken as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll be on top of this, of course, and hopefully you'll hear before we do from your dealer, as opposed to waiting another week. And I would hope that by the time we do the show next week, they've got a fix on this because a lot of folks are reporting they lost nav, they lost audio, at least radio systems, if not all of audio, and Bluetooth. I mean, the whole thing has just gone down into what appears to be kind of a repeated reboot in most cases. That would be just infuriating. So we'll stay on top of that. Yeah, we'll let you guys know what happens on that as soon as we hear more. And we'll have it in the news, of course, at Roadshow. As soon as we hear word of that, it'll be on our site at theroadshow.com. Infiniti wants to leapfrog the Germans and almost everyone except Tesla and become really kind of wall-to-wall in autonomy, according to their president, who was speaking at a automotive conference in China a couple days ago. He pointed out that some of the very advanced self-driving in the Q50 right now will soon become de facto across their line. They say that's going to be the new baseline. They're kind of talking about a level 3 light here, where the car can handle, as the Q50 does, distance to other cars, speed, and pretty aggressive lane maintenance all by itself. That's basically level 3, isn't it?
Yes, pretty much. Probably, it sounds like this only works above 37 miles an hour, so it won't take you to a complete stop and back up again, which would be one thing that you would hope to see, and maybe they'll have that coming. But this makes a whole lot of sense. You know, once you develop these technologies, the cost to roll them out is pretty limited. The sensors you need in the car are relatively cheap. It's really the upfront development cost that's really expensive on these systems. And so, you know, if Infiniti is looking to differentiate themselves, as of course they all are, this would be a pretty good way for them to do so, to roll this out across the line and make it, you know, even if they made a standard feature across the line, that would be a pretty amazing thing. I'm guessing there'll probably be a premium involved. But even so, to have this available on all their cars, that'd be a great talking point for them and something that nobody else in the industry is offering, except, as you mentioned, for Tesla right now.
Yeah, I mean, they can get right up into the rarefied strata pretty quickly if they were to do that. So we'll see how fast they can actually put some meat on the bones on this sort of comment by their president. When we come back in a moment, we're going to have some more for you, including the latest sneak peek at the new Panamera. The world waits with bated breath for whatever's going to happen to that car. Very polarizing design, as you know. And some really cool wagons coming to the U.S. That and more when Autocomplete continues. Back to Autocomplete. I'm Brian Cooley with Tim Stevens, our editor-in-chief from Roadshow at theroadshow.com. Another sneak of the new Panamera, the first complete overhaul on that vehicle is coming very soon. And we now have got a sneak peek of the rear. I see Charger bred with A7, which isn't a bad thing.
No, not at all. It definitely looks a little bit more purposeful, but it looks an awful lot like the Mission E concept that we saw last year, which, of course, was very much like the Panamera. They're all electric, all-wheel drive kind of supercar concept that they kind of wowed us with and then pulled it away, and we haven't seen it since. So I think we'll probably see a lot of that in this car as well. But, yeah, it's being unveiled on, I believe, on the 28th of this month, so just a couple weeks away.
Yeah, not too long ago, and take a look. We got the shot over there at the roadshow, theroadshow.com, and it's a very different looking sort of, as you can see there, it's a very different looking sort of a taillight and a connecting LED strip across the two. Pretty tasty stuff. Oops, sorry, I got the roadshow on right there, don't I? Okay. it's such a good sight. I can't help but look
at it
and autoplay
really,
the video.
Really good sight. Genuinely good sight.
Let's talk about some wagons. I always love talking about wagons. I love them. And we've got the new Audi S4 coming out. And the question is, will we get the Avant, the sport wagon version of that? Mm-hmm. The S4 is going to get a little more horsepower, a little more torque, as you might imagine. We have 354 horsepower, 3-liter bi-turbo V6. The question of whether we get the Avant or not is still up in the air. As you can see from the photos that we're showing you there now, Audi's got a touch with little wagons or shooting brakes. They've just always done them well. And I can't imagine this wouldn't do well in the U.S.
They look fantastic, but we haven't seen an Audi sport wagon in a while. We've had the S4, the S6, the RS6, the RS4, we haven't had any of them in the Avant configuration, which is really frustrating because if you go to Europe, you pretty much see wagons everywhere. Kind of the sports sedan market is a little bit limited, actually, compared to the sport wagon market. But here in the U.S., of course, it's all about sedans, and so those of us who love our wagons are left usually wanting. And, you know, I probably would not bet on the S4 Avant coming to the U.S., but we will at least get the new sedan, so that's something.
One of our colleagues in our marketing department has the last generation 4 Avant, I believe, and it's down in the garage at Second Street. Mm-hmm. I think you know the car I'm talking about. And every time I see her, I say, "When you're ready to sell, you let me know." So that's how I'm going to get my Audi sport wagon.
I have an STI wagon, and I was lucky to get one right before they stopped bringing the Subaru STI wagon to the U.S. So they don't do that anymore either. So I'm glad to. I'm going to be keeping that thing for a while, I think.
Damn the crossovers. We're also going to, we have good word here that we can't confirm is that the new Mercedes E-Class, the 17, which we covered as it got unveiled in January at Detroit. We were at the event there when that was unveiled. A lot of interesting technology around that car, but also the interesting part here is today is they will be continuing the wagon in the new generation. It looks really good as a wagon. This will be an E400 wagon, and they're opening the door also to also doing an AMG version on top of that. So Mercedes keeping the banner flying for wagons on the E-Class side. Lincoln may be soon building a plant in China where they are, you know, Lincoln's still trying to find its footing. They've had some traction, I mean, as I feel it, in the last, you know, 6 months to a year, but still trying to really find its footing of where it has a great big hit in terms of model and in terms of market. China may be that place. This is going to be joining GM and VW, who I think are the two biggest makers of cars in China who aren't Chinese brands. I don't know anything yet that Lincoln would start using China as a design studio the way Buick does. I think two of the Buicks now are Chinese designed as well.
Right. Lincoln sold, I think about, 12,000 cars there last year in China. That was about 10% of what they sold here in the U.S. But Lincoln's got big goals. They want to be selling about 300,000 cars, I think it is, in 2020. So they need to make a big step forward, and being dominant in the Chinese market would be a great way for them to do so. The new Continental, I think, would be probably a hit in the Chinese market in terms of the luxury appointments it's offering and everything else. It seems to be squarely what the Chinese market's looking for. So I think they could find some success there. But, of course, by building in China, they can save a lot of money on tariffs and things like that. So this is a financially sound move for them, at least.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, so the goal is 300,000. Is that right?
300,000 by 2020. So that's about, they got a double more or less from where they are
now.
That's
a lot.
They've increased by about 40% over the past couple of years. So they're making pretty good progress. And, you know, if the Continental drives as well as it looks, maybe they can get there.
All right. And then last rumor we got for you here, and, you know, it's fairly substantial, is that Skoda considering coming to the U.S. Now, a lot of our viewers maybe have just barely heard of Skoda, don't know the company. It is sort of the old Eastern Bloc VW. It's a Czech-based car. Not that I want to lay the, you know, I don't want to give it any kind of, well, that sounded great, didn't it? Let's try that again. Skoda is the Eastern Bloc VW. It's the cousin of Volkswagen, a lot of the same platforms and parts. It is Czech-based. But the new Skoda is not at all. I mean, everyone's thinking about a Trabant right now as I'm talking about this, right? Mm-hmm. Skoda was never quite at that level. But it was definitely a lesser cousin. But in the last number of years, it has not been a lesser cousin. They're great cars when I've seen them. I've got limited time around them, never driven one, but they look really nice when I see them in Europe. And now they're considering coming to the U.S. We know this because they've recently trademarked automotive brand trademarks for Superb, Octavia, and Yeti. So trying to, which are three models they make. Isn't Yeti something from Star Wars?
Yeti would be a success in perhaps portions of the Northwest where they have Bigfoot sightings and things like that.
It'd be interesting to see.
But the Yeti is a you know, it's a little crossover that's got kind of chunky styling that I think could do pretty well in the U.S. You know, Skoda's, like you mentioned, basically Volkswagen's value brand. It has a lot of the same driving character as Volkswagen, but without quite as nice interior appointments. But they're significantly less expensive in Europe and in the U.K. And if they could come to the U.S. and kind of bring some of the allure or some of the high quality aspirations of VW, at least, but at a much lower cost, I think they could be successful. But, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories that maybe Volkswagen's going to pull out of the U.S. market and Skoda's going to come in. I think that may be a little bit either optimistic or pessimistic, depending on how you look at it. But that's one of the things that's been kind of bounced around, is why Skoda would come to the U.S. I think that's probably not going to happen. But I think they could do well in the U.S., but we'll have to wait and see what the plan is.
Yeah, because VW also gets knocked, always gets knocked as being, you know, competing with a lot of value makers like Toyota, right, and Honda, but at a higher price. They had to cheapen and kind of dumb down the Jetta a few model years ago. Got right. a lot of kind of a guff about that. This might be an answer to that. And so that theory that you're talking about, which is the central theory, is VW so damaged in the U.S. because of Dieselgate that they might consider bringing in Skoda to clean the plate, if you will? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't believe it either. I don't think VW is exactly crippled. I mean, did a quick look at some numbers so far this year through May. VW is down 6% compared to the same period a year ago, but these fluctuate a lot during the season of the year. Toyota, by comparison, is only down 2%, so you might say, wow, big difference. But BMW is off almost 10% so far through May, and I don't think anyone's worried about BMW. So these numbers in the auto business, they fluctuate a lot through the year. It's a fast-changing game, if you will. It's one where I don't buy, like I don't think you do, the idea that VW is somehow fatally damaged or injured here.
Right. From what we know thus far, anyway, I mean, if we get the Dieselgate resolution and Volkswagen is suddenly basically sued into bankruptcy, well, that may change things. But, right. but as it stands, no, I don't think that people really see Volkswagen and kind of, you know, spit on it on the roads these days. I don't think that we're going to get to that point either. So I think VW is healthy enough to continue on. But a value option Volkswagen, you know, that makes sense in Europe. It could make sense here, too.
That's Roadshow for this week, autocomplete for this week, I should say, from Roadshow at theroadshow.com. Stay on top of all the news and the latest reviews and our experiences with everything from the most simple cars to Tim's Huracan Spider at theroadshow.com. In the rain, no less. That's pretty cheeky. A drop top, open top, I should say, a Lamborghini in the rain. That's good living.
Keep it over 40 and you don't get wet. That's the way it works.
That's right. You gotta find the aerodynamic edge there where it just poosh. Goes right over the dome. All right, folks, thanks for watching, and we'll catch you next week.